It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Well, you know, I can talk about razor blades if you'd like me to. You know, I think they're bound to come out with one that's like, you know, with 50 blades on it or something. But what would be the point of that? Okay. Well, hey, let's get right to it with
the fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
All kinds of stuff going on, Scott. Tell us about it.
Yeah, lots of stuff happening in Wednesday's market. Started off pretty good. Futures were strong. European numbers were pretty strong. But we got some selling off towards the end of the day. The Dow closed Wednesday down 97 points to 12,780, S&P down 7 points, NASDAQ down 16 points. A little bit of a reversal from what we've been seeing earlier in the week. Gold up $12 an ounce to 1730, and another move in the wrong direction as far as I'm concerned with oil, up $1.29 at $102 a barrel.
Well, so the obvious question is this a pullback? Is this the beginning of a pullback?
Well, I think 97 points on the Dow is nothing to even bat an eye at. I think if we get 4 or 5 days of some extended losses like this, it's, the so-called technicians in the market will certainly see it as a pullback. If we start to see some moving average convergence and divergence and crossovers and stuff like that,
yeah, you made my eyes cross. That's what you made.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
What crossed over.
Then we'll start to see some call for the potential of a correction, not a reversal.
Pullback is what, maybe 5%?
Yeah, I think 5%.
Corrections at 10.
Yep.
And then what's after that? Bear market's 20.
A bear market's 20. And we certainly have room for it. Any normal, healthy market is going to have pullbacks and corrections, and it doesn't just go up every day except for so far year-to-date this year.
Okay.
And October.
So some of the pullback, I think, and well, maybe I shouldn't call it even a pullback yet. Some of the what we saw on Wednesday's market is attributable to Greece.
Yeah, still a lot of uncertainty out of Greece. The news moves so fast out of Greece that it's hard to keep up with. There is getting to be more and more call from the responsible parts of Europe to say, listen, why are we doing this? Why do we continue to throw money at them? They're telling us, the Greeks are telling us to our face, we want your money, we'll take your money, and then when we're done, we'll probably change the deal.
That's extraordinary. You know, here we go. You know, we always talk about, well, you know, always talk about, but I often find myself talking about the disconnect that exists between the real world that most of us live in and then this political world or what, you know, you see on this stuff that's just silly. And in the real world, no bank would do that with a borrower. You're not going to go down to your local bank on the corner and say, you know, I want to borrow money. I don't have any money. I spend a gobs more than I take in. And
I have nothing to secure the loan with.
I got no security, and I'll sign the deal, but I'm not gonna honor it.
Yeah, just so you know, I'm not gonna honor it.
Right, but go ahead and give me the money.
Yeah, or else.
Or else, you know, I won't pay what I already owe you.
Yeah. So they're saying now that the big March bailout payment is becoming less and less likely, but they're starting to talk about maybe doing a short term loan.
They're talking about doing a two-step dance, aren't they?
Yeah, they're talking about doing a loan to the Greeks so they can pay back the loan that they took.
They were for paying back the loan before they were against it.
Yeah, so it's a mess. And then the head of the party that is presumed to win the next round of elections, Antonis Samaras, basically wrote a letter to the European Union and said, yes, we want the money. We'll do everything you ask us for. And then at the very bottom, he put, all this is subject to change.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one that did the pinky promise.
Yeah, he's the one that did the pinky promise that we talked about last week.
I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. That's just so funny. You know, how in the world do they think they're going to get the money? I don't know. He says if he's elected, he would stick to the agreed-upon program of welfare cuts and job cuts. But here's the deal. He gets in, he gets reelected, and he says, I can hear the speech. I've listened to the will of the people, and we've decided not to make these changes.
Yeah, the world's original democracy must do what the people say, and I'm sure you're right.
And so what then do the folks who've given them all the money, and it's this thing called the Troika, which is the IMF, the
ECB.
Yeah, and then also the European
Commission.
Okay, which is the European Union.
Yeah, basically it's the leaders of the European Union.
Countries in the European Union, their money.
That's right.
So their governments are loaning their money.
That's right.
Which they are borrowing.
To a great extent.
To a great extent themselves to loan to Greece.
Yeah, you know, of the top 10 borrowing nations in the world, the so-called stable part of Europe is right in the middle of them. France, Germany, UK, they're all 7, 8, 9, 10 right in there.
There you go. We'll talk more about this when we come back from our break. Stay tuned.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
We are back, and we're talking about the ever so popular topic of Greece. And so we want to continue to work it out. And what else are we going to do?
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
All right. So let's break it down a little bit. Here's one of the things that's really, you know, we were talking on the break, and it's basically our assessment that there's a pretty big hole dug here. And so how do they get out? And they may not be able to. And some argue that Greece is broken and really can't be fixed. One of the challenges is, and I got this from, where did I get this? This is Reuters report. Felix Salmon wrote this article, and I was looking this over. Greek economy has shrunken by 16%. Now, at our worst for the United States in the Great Depression, the economy shrank by 29%. Argentina experienced a 20% drop in its very difficult period back in, I think it was in the 90s. But the point is they really have a awfully difficult, even if they get the money, they've got an awfully difficult road ahead of them. I don't think there's a way out here.
Well, keep in mind that all of the plans for their way out that I've seen project them back to growth within a couple of years.
I don't think it can happen.
I don't think it can happen.
Because
either.
I think that once you see all the austerity, the better days are not ahead. The better days are worse. Because once you implement all the austerity, which is cutting government work, a lot of government work and a lot of their population works for the government.
And pensions.
And so when you look at that, when that starts to happen, it's going to make it even worse. And there's really no plan B. About the only thing they can do they end up being asked to leave the party, to leave the European Union?
Well, Argentina didn't start to recover until a default, right? They finally hit bottom, and since they've been on the way back, they have been on the way back. So I'd like to see that used as a little bit more of an
example.
Roadmap.
Yeah. Well, if they are out, and I guess once if they default in a real ugly way, nobody's going to loan them money from the European Union, and they may even just basically go away, kind of take their marbles and go, because they really, in order to pay their own bills, they got to start printing their own money again.
Yeah, they would have to go back to the drachma or some form of it. They might call it something different, but but they would have to leave the European Union.
Now, if that happened, we may have a real issue, or they may have a real issue with the devaluation and inflation, their currency, and their GDP inflation adjustment is still going to be a really difficult thing. So, I don't know. It's going to be still – so what we're seeing, ladies and gentlemen, with this analysis that we're talking about is we're seeing Greece weigh on our stock market. That's part of what you're seeing with the markets pull back a little bit. But also keep in mind that it – and Scott and I were just talking about this on the break – nothing like what we saw last year.
Yeah, nothing like what we saw last year from the standpoint of a market reaction. And we do harp on Greece, but Greece is in the front of the line, which is, and they're the most notable right now. But we still have Portugal behind them, Italy behind them, Spain, Ireland are still behind them in not as bad a shape, but in a similar condition to what Greece was a couple of years ago.
And, you know, with this happening, it mutes or dampens some of the reaction the market could otherwise have if we didn't have the Greece kind of front and center. Manufacturing's up, housing's up.
Really good housing number on Wednesday's market. All the home builders were up pretty significantly Wednesday's market. So it definitely has put a little bit of a blanket on some of the really good economic news we've had at home.
And so what happens, of course, when things look a little better, then all of a sudden that other news starts to blossom.
Yeah. So, you know, but we'll continue to keep an eye on it. There's really not a whole lot that we can do certainly about it except to try to protect against downside and stay informed.
Well, so no real major shifts we need to make with the portfolios because of what's happening right now with Greece.
Yeah, the market reactions to Greece were so extreme in the fall of last year that they did cause us to become defensive.
We already made those adjustments before.
Yeah, right. So since we've seen some more decoupling and since we've seen some really good growth numbers here at home, we've actually been putting some of that risk back into the market.
When you say decoupling, basically what you're telling people is that because we're seeing our markets start to behave and act independently.
Yeah, stand on our own merits.
Stand on our own merits, the manufacturing, the housing, these other things, and continue to see positive activity in factory output, factory numbers going up in January, revision of December numbers up again.
Yep.
So we see those things. We're seeing positivity and strength that has nothing to do with what's going on in Europe, despite the fact.
That's right. And that's what we've been waiting for.
Well, we don't have to wait any longer. We're going to take a real quick break. When we come back, I want to talk to Scott just a little bit about what's going on with Iran and the oil and a new organization I learned about called SWIFT. And after the break, you'll know all about it too, so stick around.
What if the process of creating your financial plan was easy, hassle-free, and straightforward? What if it was conducted by a friendly professional and there was nothing expected of you in return? It almost sounds too good to be true, right? It's the way David Holland has been doing business at his firm, Holland Financial, for over 15 years. Since day one, it has been David's mission to provide individuals with practical solutions for their retirement needs. Financial planning doesn't have to be complicated or stressful. To learn more about our services, visit us at hollandfinancial.com or call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your complimentary consultation. That number again is 888-747-7526.
And we are back talking about some of the things that are affecting the market Wednesday and what we expect to happen in the short term. We talked about Greece before the break. And the other thorn in the collective side of the world here is, you know, Greece is one issue, and then we've got the other one, which is Iran right now is creating some more challenges. Well, hey, it's causing oil to go up, which you will feel that in your trip to the gas station. And when you fill up your tank and you pay that extra, what, $3 or $4, you can thank Iran for that.
Well, also showed a surprising drawdown in U.S. oil inventories also announced Wednesday. So not only do we have a little bit of a choking off of supply.
Demand's up a little bit.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Well, here's something interesting. I tell you, this radio program, ladies and gentlemen, is making me a better advisor because I now know something called the Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunications.
You got it?
SWIFT is an easier way to say that. And they basically handle the transactions for hundreds of countries and all kinds of things going on, but have a big hand in the oil transactions that take place. And so in order to try to rein in Iran and their nuclear ambitions, the Europeans and the Americans are looking for a way to basically eliminate or reduce the ability of Iran to collect its oil revenues through this organization. And if that's
hitting them where it hurts.
It hurts really bad because half of their revenues are from oil taxes or oil revenues for the country, and it would be devastating to them.
Yeah.
So that's something that's going on. So part of the rising of the oil prices that we're seeing, oil's up, what, about $2 a barrel?
Yeah.
So it's about 102.
Yep.
And so we're seeing that primarily because of this potential for the oil to be – basically, Iran would have a very difficult time selling its oil and not have its oil revenues, but that would obviously reduce some of the supply in the market. And also just the tensions would be further raised, and people are concerned, of course, something could happen in that area from an attack or something else.
Yeah, we're really seeing a buildup. Brent oil climbed to a six-month high by the close on Wednesday, so prices have been building up really pretty consistently here. And, you know, the political rhetoric is getting more and more elevated. The European Union agreed to stop importing crude oil from Iran starting July 1st. Tehran turns around and they say, oh, yeah, well, we're going to ban oil exports to six European countries. And at the same time, Mr. Ahmadinejad delivered a tough speech denouncing Western countries as wild wolves with an insatiable appetite for colonizing and dominating other countries. So basically, he's saying, listen, I have the nuclear power. I can do what I want with it, and you can't do anything about it.
That's spoiling for conflict. More than Fox News has a report out that more than 40 Iranian banks and institutions use this network, this SWIFT, to process financial transactions. And if they... Iranians, those banks lose access to that flow of international funds, that could really hurt the Islamic Republic's economy. But the real problem here, of course, that I'm sure is being very much considered, because there's no hatred with the Iranian people. Okay, there's nobody that, you know, there is a long history of relationships, but it's the current regime that's in place. And so if that happened, where Europe or the United States puts pressure on this organization to basically cut off the ability of Iranian banks and their ability to sell and have transactions to sell their oil, that it's really going to hurt the everyday average Iranian. And, you know, the household goods are likely to go up, and their currency is likely to drop substantially.
Yeah, they have one of the world's most valuable resources, and the people do not benefit from it at all. It's really a shame.
Well, those are some real concerns that, that people are worried about, and hopefully that will resolve. You know, it's kind of about getting them back to the negotiating table, I suppose. But I just don't see the leadership there in Iran blinking.
Yeah, I don't see negotiation as a valuable tool unless it's behind closed doors you know, deal making and things like that. But there isn't going to be any kind of traditional negotiation, I don't think.
So what that means for you, ladies and gentlemen, is that you need to be looking at your risk of your portfolios, because if we do see oil start to march because of Middle East conflict, that will affect the market. The stock market will and can drop because of rising oil prices, especially if there's a spike. You know, and it may not be a long-term reduction, but it can be significant. So there is your piece of financial perspective. All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll continue the show.
Sometimes I know what I want to say, but just can't find the words.
Last week, I shouted at my grandson, and I'm not sure why.
I saw my daughter, but couldn't remember her name.
The sooner you recognize the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, the sooner you can do something about it. To learn more, go to alz.org/10signs. That's alz.org/10signs. A message from the Alzheimer's Association.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 on WESH Channel 2, starting February 20th. The following top secret message is ready for declassification.
Oh, yes, it is. And let's get right to it. Top secret. Well, not so much top secret, but just maybe not that well known. And there's a lot of misunderstanding about this magic 70 and a half age for people who need to take money out of their retirement plans or accounts. 401ks, if you're not working, IRAs, 403bs, 457s, all of these things are required to have withdrawals made when you turn 70 and a half. Now, there's a little bit of a wrinkle in it. And first of all, whoever set up a 70 and a half, I don't know what the idea was there. Maybe it was just a I don't know. Maybe it was a conspiracy to create more work for the accountants. I don't know. But most accountants I know don't really like the fact that it's an odd number. But, it, you know, should it be 70, 71? It's a little confusing. And a lot of times people will say, so I got to take it out at 71, 70 and a half. What is it? Well, you have to make a withdrawal from your qualified accounts the year that you turn 70 and a half during that calendar year, but you also have until April of the year following, and that gets really confusing for people. Now, what does this rule apply to? Well, as I said before, it applies to all your qualified accounts and your 401k if you're not working. If you're still working, then there's an exemption. Let me tell you what it doesn't apply to, and I've had this question often, and I hear people talk about it. It doesn't apply to Roth IRAs if you've made the conversion. One of the advantages of a Roth IRA is that you've already paid the tax, so you no longer have to worry about those required minimum distributions. Now, it also doesn't apply to any type of tax-deferred annuity or tax-sheltered annuity. So if you've got money in an annuity and it's been cooking for 10 years and you've turned 70, you'd let it cook for another 10 years if you don't need to draw the income. And remember, any money you take from an IRA, a 403B, 457, 401K, an annuity, those all are taxed as ordinary income, not capital gains. And that's probably the way it will always be, because usually for most people, ordinary income is a higher tax bracket than capital gains. And the source of the IRA money came from deferring income while you're working or making a deduction on your taxes against your income. Now, there's some concern or confusion about when do you actually take it. I know I can take it by April 1st of the year following I turn 70 and a half, but if you do that, you would have to then take two withdrawals in that year. Most of the time when I work with people planning their withdrawals, it makes a lot more sense to go ahead and take a distribution from those qualified accounts in the year that you turn 70 and a half. Now, you don't have to take it. Well, first of all, one of the common questions is, well, how much? And there's a formula that the IRS uses, and each year that number changes. So as you get older, the percentage you have to take out goes up. So it starts at about 3.5%. That's the amount you need to take out. That's the rough number. There's an actual formula used to calculate, and it's based on your December 31st of the prior year. So for somebody who turns 70 and a half this year, they would need to make a withdrawal based on all of those accounts that they have. If they have 50 or they have two IRAs, you add them all up, and you've got to take 3.5% roughly of the account balances as of December 31st, 2011. Now, you don't have to take it from each account. You can take it all from one account. You can take it from three of them. You just have to make sure it all adds up to the total. So if your required distribution is $1,000, just as an example, then it can come from 10 accounts or it can come from one account. The IRS doesn't care as long as you show it as income. Now, one of the things that people sometimes get in a little bit of a twist about is, well, when do I do that? Do I do it during the year? Do I do it every month? How do I do that? And I usually advocate doing it monthly, because very often that's a nice way of doing it. We also might incorporate it into the income planning we're doing for a client. Some people say, well, yeah, but let's wait until the end of the year or we'll figure something else out. I don't know. I like the simplicity of taking it every month. And the other thing is, make sure that when you draw that money out, as you've often heard me talk about, make sure you're not drawing it from the stock market. You're drawing it from something safe. So you may need to reposition your IRA into something more secure when it's time to start making your required minimum distributions. And you think about it, if you're taking RMDs, you're 70 at least, that money probably shouldn't be all in the market anyway. It won't be if you talk to me. I'm going to be telling you to be more conservative with it. So be careful. And also, there are other things to consider, which is your tax bracket. Very often people want to maximize or take advantage of the lower tax bracket. So there is some tax planning in terms of how much you draw out. I like taking IRAs and using them for income, but that is what's involved with required minimum distributions. Taking a break. We'll be right back.
Did you know living longer could be the death of your retirement? According to the U.S. Census Bureau, babies born today can expect to live until an average age of 78. Whether you're retiring today, tomorrow, or in 20 years, you must ask yourself, will your retirement plan go the distance? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
I promised to give you a finishing of the story from yesterday's show when I was talking about the hammer and the nail, so let me get back to it.
That's like so totally disgusting. I'm like so sure. It's like barf me out. Ew, gag me with a spoon.
Well, the gagging I'm doing is over what I call the hammer and nail. It's all the spend that's in the financial services industry. And I introduced this concept to you yesterday. The only place there's more spend than in politics, which is really a lot of spend, is in financial services. And I call it the hammer and the nail because when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. If all somebody does is sell mutual funds, then there's going to be a real strong incentive for them to do that. And so if you ask them, what should I do with my money? Well, what do you think they're going to say? Or if you talk to somebody and all they do is annuities, well, guess what they're going to talk about? And guess what they're going to think is going to be the solution to any and every all needs you have? And again, business ethics, people that are ethical, that conduct themselves the way they should and don't put their interest ahead of their client is going to do what's best, but you can't always count on that. So I strongly recommend when you talk to an advisor, you understand their capabilities. I wrote all about this in my second book, How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. I broke down and dissected and broke apart and helped you understand how advisors work and what they're able to do and what they're not able to do and give you really a roadmap for the questions to ask. But be clear. Let me tell you what each of these financial products are really for, because sometimes it can get really twisted up. So let me help you sort this out. Mutual funds, what is their purpose? Growth mutual funds have a bunch, mostly stocks, and they're for growth. They're to accumulate or to help you fight inflation. Bonds. Bonds are there for more income and are less risky in general than stocks. A combination of stocks and bonds in a mutual fund portfolio is more balanced and can have growth potential but won't be as volatile as a pure growth portfolio. Annuities are all about income. There are four major types of annuities. They are useful or helpful in different situations. Some are more helpful than others in different types of client or individual situation. You've got to make sure you have the right one for you. And for some people, they are inappropriate or unnecessary. Some people, they make a lot of sense. Life insurance. Life insurance is for two primary purposes. It's to provide cash needed if somebody dies, and it is to meet a cash shortfall, to fund and pay for things that are no longer will be paid for because the person who died, they were the breadwinner, or the insurance also can be used to transfer money from one generation to the another. Do you want to know what the people who are affected by estate taxes do? They do trusts and they do life insurance to help pay for the estate taxes, those inheritance taxes, and to also reduce those taxes. Life insurance is not an investment. Okay, so if you need life insurance, there's different types. Work with an independent advisor to find the right type for you. But it's not something that, because I see sometimes an offer of buy this life insurance and it earns 4%. Well, yeah, inside the insurance, life insurance policy, the insurance company might credit the cash you have in there with 4% interest, but you're still paying for life insurance. It's life insurance. It's life insurance. All right. Individual stocks and bonds. Individual stocks can be very risky. They can be very, very rewarding. You're taking on two levels of risk with an individual stock. You're taking on the overall risk of the stock market itself. Fancy word that we use for that is called systemic risk. But you also have the risk of the individual stock. You can ask people that had Enron stock. Okay. You had not only the risk of the overall market, but you had the risk of the individual company, and that thing blew up. So you have higher risk with individual stocks than you do, say, having a mutual fund portfolio. And bonds. Bonds have risks of their own. When interest rates go up, bonds go down in value, period. Okay. Morningstar did a study. For every 1% increase in interest rates, a 10-year bond goes down 10%. $100,000 becomes $90,000. It's that simple. Okay, that's how it works. The longer the bond, the more it's affected by rising interest rates. Now, if you hold it to maturity, you get back your face value. But if you need to sell it halfway in, you might not get all your money back. So as you think about what you need for your situation, you need to do a couple of things. One, you need to make sure what you're looking for, the person who's advising you can offer. And so And you also need to understand that all of these different financial products have their purpose, and none of them can do everything. There is no panacea. Very often, you've got to use a combination of these things to get where you need to be for planning and entering and staying retired. Thanks for listening.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland, and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.